Security Trisha McLaughlin as just an illegal alien?
I think it's inhumane, and I think they're acting in ways that are just not professional. I encourage these types of people to look more into our community, to visit our people, talk to our people. They're hardworking people. They love this country, and they love to give back.
Alejandro, your active duty Marine brothers, two of them, are stationed at Camp Pendleton, while 700 of their fellow Marines were deployed to L.A. amidst the immigration protests. And, of course, you're a Marine veteran. Your final thoughts on what's happening today? And do you know if your father will get out?
I'm not sure my father will get out yet. That's what we're trying to push and trying to do. And then about the whole Marine Corps thing in LA, I mean, I know these Marines are just following orders. But I do believe that they're hurt as well. As I know that a lot of their families are undocumented or came from another country and raised them right, and that's why they're there.
Alejandro Barranco, we thank you so much for being with us. Marine veteran, son of Narciso Barranco, who's currently being detained in California. And Jonathan Hernandez, council member for the city of Santa Ana. Thank you. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, on Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m. as I interview Kayla and Ashlyn, founders of Little Critter Crew Small Animal Rescue. We are also joined by an active volunteer, Sarah. We will learn all about the mission of the Little Critter Crew and the animals they rescue, which are many. Bunnies, chinchillas, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, hedgehogs, mice, rats, and sugar gliders, and sometimes kittens and geckos. So don't miss That Vegan Show, Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m., only on KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Metropolitan Family Services Cache, Oregon, committed to improving the financial health of low to moderate income families and individuals by providing free tax preparation services. Volunteers are currently needed to support this program. All training is provided and no tax experience is necessary. More info on volunteering at cacheoregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the man mistakenly deported to El Salvador by the Trump administration appeared in a Tennessee courtroom today.
Oregon has now seen its first measles case of 2025 in an unvaccinated person.
And in international news, NATO leaders agreed today to a massive hike in defense spending.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summertime membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm David Chittenden.
And I'm Josh Salem. Oregon's unemployment rate reached 4.8% last month, the highest level in almost 4 years. And that's not even counting the 185 employees at the Door Factory in Prineville who'll be laid off beginning late August. Nor does it count the more than 100 workers that the Tualatin battery manufacturer Powin is beginning to lay off. And Intel is preparing to lay off as many as one-fifth of its factory workers. Oregon factories have eliminated nearly 14,000 jobs since the fall of 2022, with overall manufacturing employment down 7%, covering a wide range of industries.
The Oregon Health Authority has confirmed our state's first measles case of 2025. Health officials are investigating a Multnomah County case of measles in a person who recently came back from an international trip. The patient, an adult who is not vaccinated, developed a sore throat, weakness, and a fever around June 16th. People at Portland International Airport's arrival and baggage claim between 6:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on June 17th might have been exposed. The same goes for those visiting the Lake Oswego Safeway, located on A Avenue between 1 p.m. and 3:20 p.m. on June 22nd. People with measles are contagious for 4 days before a measles rash and appears for 4 days afterward. A rash typically follows symptoms including a fever, cough, runny nose, and red eyes. Patients can expose others without even knowing they have the virus. Those having received the appropriate measles vaccinations are felt to be relatively safe, but unvaccinated persons are definitely at risk. Oregon has a high kindergarten non-medical vaccination exemption rate, and the OHA is concerned we may see a lot more cases. It is also possible the disease could possibly move outside the Portland metro area. Measles is one of the most contagious diseases known. It spreads through the air after a person with the virus coughs or sneezes. Measles particles can linger in the air up to 2 hours after a person who is infected leaves an area. People who might have been exposed are urged to contact their healthcare providers as soon as possible, particularly to avoid potentially spreading the disease. The person contracting measles was traveling abroad for the last 4 to 5 weeks. They were hospitalized in the Portland metro area until June 21st. No staff members or patients were exposed, and the infected person is said to be recovering.
Congress is upset about our lack of policy regarding Iran. The House Speaker questions the constitutionality of using the War Powers Act. And the chair of the Fed explains why interest rates are not being cut. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There is a legal obligation for the administration to inform Congress about precisely what is happening. What are they afraid of?
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and other Democrats are asking why the Trump administration continues to delay briefing Congress on the Iran-Israel war and the U.S.'s role. Iran and Israel agreed to a ceasefire on Tuesday night, but by Wednesday morning, both had broken it. Early intelligence reports found U.S. airstrikes set Iran's nuclear program back months, but didn't obliterate it, as President Donald Trump and others claimed. The ceasefire will likely blunt calls for a war powers resolution, and in fact, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is questioning the constitutionality of the 1973 law requiring a commander-in-chief to seek congressional approval for waging war.
If you look back at the founders' intent, you read the Federalist Papers, you read the records of the Constitutional Convention, I think that is right. And many more scholars believe the president is correct to use his executive authority in exactly the manner that he did over the weekend.
The Constitution plainly states only Congress has the right to wage war, but presidents from both parties have repeatedly ordered military action without legislative approval. New polls show most Americans disapprove of the airstrikes on Iran, but with a partisan split. More Republicans support the bombing, while Democrats and most independents oppose it. Despite initial criticism from some figures in Trump's America First movement, polls show most trust his judgment. Since the U.S. strikes, Trump's social media posts have inconsistently suggested he might support regime change in Iran. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has long been allied with Israelis who say that's the best way forward. Graham is now saying Iran can change to support peace in the Middle East, or the U.S. can look for ways to help the Iranians who want a different government.
The religious fanatics reject their agenda. They change their behavior. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know. Or you change the people and you replace the religious fanatics with people in Iran who do not want to destroy the world, who do not want to create a master religion, who want to live in peace.
But Georgetown University professor Mehran Kamrava says regime change wouldn't be easy or simple. Though Ayatollah Khamenei's government is deeply unpopular among what's left of the Iranian middle class, he says the opposition is fragmented and discontent alone isn't enough to dislodge the regime.
It also has the diehard support of anywhere between 15 to 20% of the population that is motivated by the government's ideology.
Meanwhile, Fed Chair Jerome Powell delivered the semi-annual monetary policy report to Congress. Powell has argued slowing inflation and low unemployment supports keeping interest rates stable, and he said rate changes should move in conjunction with those of other countries. But Powell has also warned of possible trouble ahead, notably inflationary pressure from tariffs and workforce issues related to migrant sweeps.
The forecast by all professional forecasters that I know of on the outside and the Fed do expect a meaningful increase in inflation over the course of this year.
This comes as Iran may attempt to close the Strait of Hormuz, through which a fifth of the world's oil and natural gas moves on its way to China and other Asian markets. That could quickly send the price of oil well over $100 a barrel. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
NATO leaders agreed today to a massive hike in defense spending. They expressed an ironclad commitment to come to each other's aid if attacked. 32 leaders, apparently bending to pressure brought by Donald Trump, said, quote, the allies commit to invest 5% of GDP annually on core defense requirements, as well as defense and security-related spending by 2035 to ensure our individual and collective obligations, end quote. Trump called the spending boost, quote, something that no one really thought about, no one thought possible. He added, quote, I don't know if I did it, but I think I did, end quote. Spain already officially announced that it cannot meet the target, calling it unreasonable. The country feels it can execute NATO's defense plans through spending only 2% of GDP on defense. Belgium also expressed reservations, and Slovakia said it reserves the right to decide about its own defense spending. There will be a review of the spending in 2029 to monitor progress and reassess the security threat posed by Russia. The leaders also underlined their commitment to NATO's collective security guarantee that an attack on one is an attack on all. Trump had previously raised doubts over whether the United States would defend its allies. The spending hike requires each country to spend billions of dollars. Ironically, it comes as the United States, NATO's biggest spending member, has been shifting attention away from Europe to focus on security priorities in the Middle East and Indo-Pacific. Trump lashed out at Spain after the meeting. He said, quote, they want to stay at 2%. I think it's terrible. You know what we're going to do? We're negotiating with Spain on a trade deal. We're going to make them pay twice as much, end quote. Many European countries face major economic challenges, and Trump's global tariff war might make it harder for members to reach their targets. Some countries are apparently already cutting welfare and foreign aid spending to channel extra funds into their military budgets. A 2018 NATO summit during Trump's first term unraveled due to a dispute over defense spending.
Some countries close to the borders of Russia and Ukraine, Poland, the three Baltic states, and the Nordic members, have committed to the 5% goal, as have Great Britain, France, Germany, and the Netherlands. In a statement, leaders said they were united in the face of profound security threats and challenges, in particular that potential long-term threat posed by Russia. It had been feared that Trump would object to that assessment. He has been reluctant to support Ukraine in its war against Russia's full-scale invasion. In fact, the Trump administration has vetoed Ukraine's bid to join NATO. The agreement would apparently take nations back to the defense expenditure levels of the Cold War. NATO countries started to cut their militaries after the Berlin Wall collapsed in 1989. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the NATO allies agreed to make 2% of GDP the minimum spending level. Last year, 22 countries were expected to hit that target. Extra funds will also be needed if the Trump administration draws down forces in Europe, where around 84,000 U.S. troops are based. The Pentagon is expected to announce its intentions in coming months. Many remain concerned that Russia could carry out an attack on NATO territory.
Americans need help with major environmental disasters, but Donald Trump is jeopardizing that aid by threatening the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Kathleen Shannon tells us more.
As the Trump administration considers a major overhaul of the nation's leading disaster relief agency, a new poll shows the majority of Americans think the government should help impacted communities in Wyoming and across the U.S. The May poll from Pew Research Center shows more than 75% of Americans say it's a good idea for the government to set stricter building standards for new constructions in places at high risk of extreme weather, including floods, major wildfires, and droughts. And it found 64% think government should provide financial assistance for communities to rebuild after an event. Senior researcher Brian Kennedy with the center says support for those ideas crosses party lines.
Large shares of Democrats and Republicans say that it's a good idea to set stricter building standards in these communities. And similarly, majorities say it's a good idea for the government to provide financial assistance for people in high-risk areas to rebuild.
This as Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem considers renaming or reforming the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, after she ended the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program in April. According to the National Centers for Environmental Information, there were 27 climate disasters in the U.S. that caused at least $1 billion in damages last year, making it the fourth costliest year on record. Survey respondents were more split on other approaches. Half of Democrats agree the government should help cover the rising cost of homeowners insurance in those places, while less than a third of Republicans agreed. Regardless of party affiliation, Kennedy says that most people who have experienced extreme weather connect it to climate change.
When we look at this data and what we've seen over the past several years, it's the broad pattern in that you see large shares of Americans say climate change has contributed at least a little.
He adds that these questions are relatively new ones for Americans to be considering, and he expects to have more data in the future. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's The Underground. Then at 7, PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Tonight's weather will be overcast. The low will be 58. And tomorrow will also be overcast with a small chance of rain. The high will be 71. Today in history, in 1947, The Diary of a Young Girl, better known as The Diary of Anne Frank, was published. Frank compiled her writing while hiding for 2 years from Nazis in an attic in the Netherlands. The family was apprehended, and she died of typhus in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in 1945. The quote of the day is from Ms. Frank, who wrote, "Despite everything, I believe that people are really good at heart." She also said, "How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world."
Iran's nuclear program may not be as damaged as Donald Trump has stated, saying it was, quote, "completely and totally obliterated," end quote. This comes after the operation, named Midnight Hammer, happened on Sunday, where stealth bombers and cruise missiles targeted 3 key enrichment sites. A report issued on Monday by the Defense Intelligence Agency contradicts this statement, saying that while the sites did experience significant damage, the facilities were not totally destroyed. The assessment concluded that there was limited damage to critical infrastructure and would only take a few months to rebuild. The White House rejected the assessment, calling it, quote, "flat out wrong," end quote. The assessment comes less than a day after a ceasefire was declared between Israel and Iran, both sides agreeing to stop fighting. In a statement on X in Farsi, Iran's Speaker of Parliament said that Iran would completely disregard Israel's demands to stop enriching uranium. A full Senate has been slated to get a classified briefing sometime later this week.
The mistaken deportation of Kilmar Abrego Garcia to El Salvador has become a flashpoint in Donald Trump's immigration crackdown. Abrego Garcia has been back in the United States for more than 2 weeks after being charged with human smuggling in Tennessee. He appeared in court today for a hearing to discuss the conditions of his release while the criminal charges are pending. There were preceding concerns ICE might take him into custody following the hearing and even deport him. Now, Abrego Garcia will remain in jail as lawyers debate where he should be housed. The strength of the government's smuggling allegations, including its claim he is a member of the violent MS-13 street gang, had been questioned. A federal prosecutor's request earlier in the week to keep him in jail while he awaits trial was denied. The smuggling charges stem from a 2022 traffic stop for speeding in Tennessee, during which Abrego Garcia was driving a vehicle with 9 passengers who didn't have any luggage. Officers involved apparently discussed among themselves their suspicions of smuggling. However, he was allowed to continue driving with only a warning. A Department of Homeland Security special agent, Peter Joseph, testified at a June 13th court hearing in Nashville that witnesses had testified to a grand jury that they saw him smuggling people, guns, or drugs, and he earned upward of $100,000 a year doing so. Abrego Garcia pleaded not guilty at that June 13th hearing. His attorneys have characterized the case as an attempt by Trump's Republican administration to justify his mistaken deportation in March. In fact, Abrego Garcia's lawyers told a judge that government witnesses cooperated to get favors regarding their immigration status or criminal charges they were facing dropped. At least one witness was living in the U.S. illegally with a criminal record and is now getting preferred status. In her ruling Sunday, U.S. Magistrate Judge Barbara Holmes noted inconsistencies about Abrego Garcia's alleged ties to MS-13, writing that two witnesses offered general statements and hearsay. The judge urged ICE to cooperate with federal prosecutors to keep him in the U.S. to face his criminal charges. Holmes said, quote, "I can't order ICE to take any particular actions with respect to Mr. Abrego in this case. The most I can do is request the U.S. Attorney's Office to encourage cooperation from Homeland Security," end quote. Defense attorneys are also concerned Abrego Garcia will be deprived of his Sixth Amendment rights. The Sixth Amendment provides guarantees to criminal defendants, including the right to a trial without undue delay and the right to confront witnesses against them. In February, the Trump administration designated MS-13 as a foreign terrorist organization. And in March, it deported Abrego Garcia to a notorious prison in El Salvador. The administration described its violation of the immigration judge's 2019 order as an administrative error.
Native Americans still face severe gaps in health outcomes. Eric Galatis tells us more from Colorado.
American Indian and Alaska Native communities in Colorado continue to face significant gaps in healthcare access, quality, and outcomes, according to a new analysis of the Colorado All-Payer Claims Database. While these communities face higher rates of many chronic conditions, they're also not getting important preventative care. David Wright with the Denver Indian Center says fear remains a primary barrier, pointing to decades of mistreatment, including the forced sterilization of women and federal policies that forced medicine men and other spiritual leaders into mental asylums up until 1978.
Native people for a long time have been used to advance medical research without their consent. And so there's a large mistrust within the Native communities against the medical profession.
Between 2018 and 2024, American Indian and Alaska Native people were diagnosed with kidney disease, autoimmune, nervous, metabolic, and endocrine disorders such as diabetes at rates far above their white peers. Wright says the analysis, produced in partnership with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare, will be used to create a culturally tailored education program for health providers. Without additional training, Wright says health professionals are likely to continue to assume that chronic conditions are due to an individual's dietary choices. Many don't understand that for over 100 years, tribes had to rely on government rations, typically high in carbohydrates and salt, to get enough calories.
Because of the forced relocation and reservation systems and relying on heavily carbohydrate-related rations,
poverty, lack of affordable housing, and the breakdown of family systems also disproportionately impact health outcomes. Wright says better health will require treating the whole person, not just specific medical conditions. When people are out of balance in any one area, he says there are ripple effects.
If we're not able to provide stable housing, which is not only a mental and emotional and physical importance, but it also will affect the outcomes and the teachings and the role modeling you need for your children and your family structures.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
If food distributed to the disadvantaged isn't familiar to the recipients, they may not want it, even in the setting of significant food insecurity, or they may not know how to use it. At least one nonprofit is now including what are considered more traditional foods in their boxes. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As food insecurity rises across the country, groups fighting hunger are highlighting the need for food that is not only nutritious, but culturally relevant. Isabel Charlet has more.
Le'aloha Kaula heads the nonprofit Kalo HCC, which serves Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander communities in Oregon and Southwest Washington. The organization started distributing food boxes during the pandemic, and Kaula says the food didn't always meet people's needs because it wasn't familiar or they didn't know how to use it. In response, she says Kalo started including traditional foods in the boxes, like taro root and coconut.
It was not just hunger for food, it was that hunger for culture. It was that hunger for home. That's what was filled.
Visits to food banks in the state have risen sharply in the last year, and data shows Pacific Islander Oregonians are twice as likely to experience hunger than their white neighbors. Kaula says Kalo HCC has also started cultivating taro, a Native Hawaiian staple, and encouraging people to get involved in the project.
Even though we're here in Oregon, that's still a connection to home. It's about how we as Indigenous people are caring for the land.
Amid federal cuts to food programs, Kaula says she wants to see Oregon focus more on providing culturally relevant foods so all communities in the state can thrive.
To really truly have a healthy Oregon, we have to make sure that we're serving all the communities in a way that makes them feel seen, heard, and feed them in that way.
I'm Isabel Charlet.
In the basement of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in Juneau, Alaska, sits thousands and thousands of photographs. They were taken by a Tlingit elder who has since passed on, but for decades he documented important events and everyday life. And as KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports, the organization wants help identifying people and places in the photos.
Kahkahu Cyril George Sr.'s family unearthed his photo collection in the wake of his death 11 years ago. His granddaughter, Lillian Woodbury, said she was astounded at the volume of photos he kept in a small Juneau condo.
That tiny little room had been harboring all of these memories he captured in photo. I mean, every time we thought, we've got them all, we pulled out another box or another container, and I'd be like, oh my God, Mom, it's another box of photos.
A family friend suggested they donate the photographs to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute to preserve and store them.
There's so much just joy in these photos. It's one of my favorite things, looking through them and seeing people just having a good time. People dancing, people talking to each other, cooking out on the beach.
That's Emily Galgano, one of the archivists who's been combing through the photos for the last several years. Some of the photos are online now. SHI hopes people will recognize some of the faces. The photos are full of life. Most are of people. Dancers in full regalia, fishing trips with strung up halibut, graduations and meetings. They show Tlingit people living, working, teaching, and making art. They show elders and babies, and elders with babies. And those babies may be elders now themselves. Tlingit photographer Brian Wallace helped SHI scan the photographs. He knew George growing up, and looking through the photos, they show how Southeast Alaska Native cultures have endured.
You know, they were thriving back then. They were thriving when he took the photos and still thriving.
Woodbury, George's granddaughter, says it was hard to part with the collection. She hopes that others, like Wallace, will look through the collection and find photos of loved ones who've passed on.
I think if people walk away seeing these photos and they feel like he gave them that one moment in time back, that makes me happy.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael kind of wishes it were still spring.
Friday and Saturday, we got much needed rain. Saturday night in Iran, it only rained in three spots. Rained bombs, American bombs. But Iran had moved the uranium and the site's only partially damaged. Let's start summer with a war. So you didn't think Donnie was crazy and dangerous, as if putting the kibosh on American democracy wasn't enough? Doubling his personal wealth in 2 years isn't corruption? There's a narcissistic maniac in charge of the world's greatest military, deciding the fate of the U.S. economy and who knows how much else. I don't want the military running the country, but what else can stop Trump? Assassinations out, cause murder's evil and Vance's worse. 5 million marching didn't change anything. Maybe 50, a national strike. The staff of Mar-a-Lago walking off the job. But Dan, you say there's a ceasefire. Netanyahu, Khomeini, Trump, who's not to trust? Iran sells a lot of drones to Russia and oil to China. And amidst all this geopolitical hoo-ha, nature could be stepping up to bat. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and David Chittenden. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Kathleen Shannon, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Galatas. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm David Chittenden.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact. Thank you.
Making contact.
You're listening to Making Contact. I'm Lucy Kang. The TV show The Bear gives